Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday afternoon, and it's time for all things political. Did Friday's video almost certainly end any chance Donald Trump has of becoming president? An NBC Wall Street Journal poll shows, and this was before the debate, after the video was released, there's now an 11-point deficit. Clinton 48%, Trump 35%, Johnson 9%, and Stein 2%. We, of course, will be talking about last night's debate. We'll talk about things that have been happening today. Paul Ryan telling the congressional conference call that took place this morning, you all need to do what's best for you and your district. He said that he would not campaign with Trump for the rest of the election and wouldn't withdraw his endorsement of him. There was some question about whether or not Mike Pence would stay on the ticket after Friday's video, but today he's out on the campaign trail in North Carolina saying Donald Trump literally embodies the spirit of America. He's proud to stand with Trump. My faith, he says, informs me we're to hold up a godly standard, but we all fall short of the glory of God. There's no one righteous other than the one. I don't condone what he said, but the other part of my faith is grace. We are called to forgive as we have been forgiven. We have a lot to talk about this hour, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls, and we'll take as many as we can. I'm sure that many of you want to join the conversation, and please do so. Here is our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, please leave many comments there so we can read through all of them. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We have two guests with us, Stefan Schmidt, commonly referred to as Dr. Politics, professor of political science at Iowa State University, the author of a number of books and articles. He's the recipient of many teaching awards, is co-author of the most widely used American government textbook, and he is also a host of his own political talk show. Stefan, hello. Thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Kathleen.
Yeah, great to have you here. And also joining us is Josh Kroshauer. He's the political editor for National Journal, writes the weekly Against the Grain column, and he was a political correspondent for Politico before where he is now, reported on congressional campaigns. He's a political analyst on television and radio, including Fox, MSNBC, CNN, the National Public Radio, and C-SPAN. Josh, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Kathleen.
Let's start with a bit of the debate last night and talk about the video and whether or not this does him in as a candidate. Here is from the debate. Obviously, everybody was waiting for this moment. Early in the debate, Anderson Cooper pressed the Republican nominee about the recent video that emerged in which he bragged about what essentially amounts to sexual assault. Here is what Donald Trump had to say, and then we'll get your response.
You bragged that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it. I have great respect for women. Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
So for the record, you're saying you never did that?
I said things that, frankly, you hear these things are said. And I was embarrassed by it. But I have tremendous respect for women.
Have you ever done those things?
Women have respect for me. And I will tell you, no, I have not. And I will tell you that I'm going to make our country safe. We're going to have borders in our country, which we don't have now. People are pouring into our country, and they're coming in from the Middle East and other places. We're going to make America safe again. We're going to make America great again, but we're going to make America safe again. And we're going to make America wealthy again, because if you don't do that, it sounds harsh to say, but we have to build up the wealth of our nation.
Thank you, Mr. Trump.
Now, other nations are taking our jobs and they're taking our wealth.
Thank you, Mr. Trump.
And that's what I want to talk about.
Let's go to Stefan and Josh and to the first question of the hour. Does that video preclude the possibility of Donald Trump becoming president? Stefan?
Well, look, it is never a good thing when a huge number of the most important leaders of a party flee from the top of their ticket, their candidate, and say, I can't vote for this person, I can't support this person, I'm out of here. That certainly is a message to a lot of people, not necessarily Trump's most dedicated supporters, but a lot of other people who are sense-sitting that Donald Trump is very toxic. And I would say, yes, that this has been a terrible blow. And then there is, of course, also the information that there are all kinds of other things that are still coming out, some tapes, takeouts from The Apprentice, for example, that we can talk about maybe later.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Josh?
Well, look, Donald Trump was on track to lose this election fairly convincingly even before the tapes came out. The trend lines the week after that first debate were pretty worrisome for both Trump and the Republican Party. But what changed with the tapes is that the party itself is now implicated in Trump's collapse. Because, I mean, we'll see how this all stabilizes in a few days, but that NBC Wall Street Journal poll showing Trump's deficit up to double digits in the immediate aftermath of the tapes release is a huge red flag for Republicans. The funny story about this election up until this weekend was that even though Trump's numbers were toxic, in almost every swing state race, Senate races, House races, Republicans were running significantly ahead of the Trump ticket. And frankly, Republicans were on track to probably keep the Senate and the House in control despite all of Trump's problems. That all changed with the videotape and Trump's numbers collapsing in the polls and Republicans going in all different directions on how to respond to this. Now they are almost inevitably tied to how Trump performs on the ballot, at least right here in the moment. And that's why you have a chaotic situation right now in Washington at Republican National Headquarters. They don't know how to best they have a base that's going to be with Trump. And even that poll that came out from the NBC and the Wall Street Journal showed the base is still largely with Trump, the Trump base. But everyone else is finding him toxic and really risking taking the party down with him.
Mm-hmm. We've all been following the news pretty closely since those tapes were released. I'm interested in what strategy Mike Pence is following, because the reports on Friday were, maybe the guy's going to withdraw. We'll find out on Monday what's going to happen. We'll put him in the ticket. We're going to figure out some way to get Donald Trump off the ticket. And now today we have Mike Pence really, really supporting Donald Trump and talking about his faith, and part of his faith is grace. It takes a big man to know when he's wrong, he said, speaking in North Carolina. What is his strategy? Stephen?
What the strategy is exactly what's going on right now, which is that the party is running to the states. Paul Ryan is going to now campaign for candidates for the House and Senate. They're going to divert the funds to that. They're not going to organize for Trump again. They're not going to fill in the voids that he has created by not organizing his campaign the way you conventionally do and not having a ground organization in most places. And I think, it's possible, isn't it, that people will still go. I mean, in Iowa, we're voting already, right? I've already voted, and the place where I went here in my Story County was filled with people voting early. And you can vote if necessary, for everybody below Trump and leave the presidential, bubble unpunched or untouched, and vote for the down-ballot candidates, because they're all fleeing from Trump and saying, I can't support Trump. You vote for me because I'm a good senator. Kelly Ayotte, I also live in New Hampshire, and Kelly Ayotte is saying, not Trump, he's not a role model. I'm sorry, I misspoke. I am a good senator, and reelect me because, you like me. And whether that's possible or not is still to be seen. I think Josh has a good point there, that it may contaminate everything. It's, like pouring bad wine into a barrel of good wine. It doesn't make good wine. It makes bad wine out of everything.
And yet, what I've been reading, I don't know where there's so much information here. Somebody reported this morning that two-thirds of Republicans want the party to stand with Donald Trump. The other third can't. That puts them in a bit of a pickle, doesn't it, Josh?
Oh, absolutely. And this is the dilemma that Republicans have been in ever since Trump won the nomination. I mean, look at Ted Cruz, for example. I think this is sort of the greatest case study of what happens when a Republican who has support from conservatives takes on Donald Trump, as Cruz did at the convention. Cruz, even after he lost the Republican primary, still had a lot of support from conservatives, had a lot of support from Republicans. The second he gave that speech at the convention in Cleveland, his support collapsed. He refused to endorse Donald Trump. He just didn't say his name, and he all of a sudden saw his support back home going downward significantly. So it got to the point where he had to backtrack just a few weeks ago and actually endorsed Trump, even after he made such a high-profile event in terms of not endorsing him. So this is the dilemma for Republicans. Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan decided early on that the formulation to survive the Trump tornado is they say they support him, but they don't endorse him. They come up with this really awkward formulation so they could have it both ways, with both the anti-Trump Republicans who might not vote for Trump but would still vote for the Republicans down ballot, but you'd also get the Trump voters who just care about Trump. They'd also still vote Republican even if they don't know who their, or don't care about who their, who their senator or congressman are. The video over the weekend just blew that calculation, blew that Faustian bargain up in smoke, and now all Republicans are running in their own corners trying to figure out what to do with just less than a month ago to the election.
So what was it about, Stefan, this particular video? This man has been in the campaign trail, I mean, for 5 years now. He's been claiming that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, not an American. What he said about Mexican Americans, disabled people, American Muslims. I mean, the list goes on and on. Assault on the Khan family. Latinos, the list goes on. Why was it this video that had everybody up in arms?
I think because everybody has women in their life, children, grandchildren, mothers, you know, and therefore it struck every single American household. The sort of grossness of the pronouncements that he made, the things that he was talking about, the language that he used, really came home to roost with most people. And it's still surprising, as Josh said, that, you know, and as you said, that, you know, a majority of Republicans still say, well, we got to vote for Trump. And I talked to a couple of my focus group here who are Republicans, and they said, you know, I'm going to still vote for him. I hate what he said. I think he's a boor. I think he's a horrible person. But Hillary Clinton is going to nominate three Supreme Court justices. And if we lose the Senate, those are going to get confirmed. And we're going to have a liberal Supreme Court into the 22nd century. And so there is this incredible imperative there for Republicans not to allow Hillary Clinton to take the White House. And God forbid the Senate should go to Democrats as well. And that's another dynamic, you know, that is making this a very complicated year.
E.J. Dionne said, Josh, this is the most shameful episode in the history of the party that gave our nation Abraham Lincoln. A steep electoral price must be paid to jolt Republicans into a period of reform, renewal, and, yes, repentance. What do you make of that?
Well, I think he's right, politically speaking, in the sense that it probably would only take a Trump wipeout, a landslide of sorts, for Republicans really to recognize the error of their ways in nominating Trump. I mean, fundamentally, again, the fact that Trump was doing what he was doing before the video, and yet Republicans were still on track to hold the Senate, suggests that if they nominated anyone besides Donald Trump, Republicans could possibly have control of the presidency, the Senate, and the House, and have large majorities in all three. The fact that they chose the one Republican who was so toxic that would basically throw their fundamental advantages entering this election into flux just shows how bad they miscalculated in this election cycle. So
I would actually sort of correct Josh, because he's not a Republican. You know, he's not a conservative either. He kind of ended up taking control of their party, saying he was a Republican, switching, you know, party registration. But, you know, he's just not a Republican. And that's even more ironic that he was able to beat a field of 60. I mean, we had all of them here in Iowa, didn't we? We had 17 of them with Trump, and he managed every single one of them to shoot him down like those little ducks at the state fair, even though he's not a conservative and not a Republican. Unbelievable, really.
You know, you wonder where everybody was doing their research on this, the Republicans, during all those debates. He's been running for president for a long time. He's been on the Howard Stern show who knows how many times. All this information was out there. Wasn't anybody doing his or her homework?
Yeah. I mean, this is a classic malpractice. I mean, there were numerous opportunities throughout this whole process for Republicans to take an off-ramp from Trump during the primary, even at the convention. If they wanted to play the nuclear card, they certainly could have denied him the nomination and taken a risk then at the expense of having at least some time to rebuild the party in the intervening months. No, this was something, but I do disagree a little bit. I mean, Trump may not have been a Republican for very long, but his voters certainly view him as a Republican. He certainly capturing this discontent and this disconnect between the Republican voting electorate and the Republican leadership, the Republican elite. And that's one thing that they never really could figure out until it was too late in the nomination process. His outsider image, the fact that he was really a non-political figure taking on the powers that be, was of great appeal to almost 40% of Republican voters. And that might not be a majority, but it's a significant share of the party that is sticking with him until this very day. Nothing can really affect their real intense support for Donald Trump. So, you know, he may not be a conventional Republican, but the Republican Party is changing before our very eyes, and what it means to be a conservative, what it means to be a Republican in good standing.
Mm-hmm. Diane on Facebook says, so if it's locker room talk, which he did say a couple of times last night, it's okay. I don't care where you say it. It contributes to the attitude of disrespect for women. It is not acceptable anywhere. Stefan, does he move beyond this? And one of you talked about things that are yet to come. Do you have any inkling of what's yet to come? But can he move past what we've already seen, which keeps getting played over and over and over again on TV?
Probably difficult, very difficult to do. But the Telegraph, the British newspaper, the Telegraph, has an interesting story. British producer of The Apprentice under pressure to release footage of it claims that Donald Trump used the N-word on The Apprentice. And there are all these, you know, cuts from The Apprentice, from the cutting floor that are in a safe somewhere. And apparently there's all kinds of stuff in there. And now the producer says, you know, if anyone releases this, they're going to pay $5 million in a leak fee to Mark Burnett. To which apparently a lot of supporters of Hillary Clinton have said, well, let's get a hold of Warren Buffett and Mark Cuban and have them say, okay, we'll pay the legal fees. Release those tapes, you people, and we'll pay your legal fees. Which, you know, so there's all that as well. So it's the anticipation of even more icky stuff, I think, that is going to plague the campaign. And, you know, frankly, Donald Trump may have seized a chunk of the American electorate, but his positions on a lot of issues, including Putin and Russia and all the other things, and trade, have nothing to do with the Republican Party's positions on those issues.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's a Republican. I think he is the manifestation of a nationalist, isolationist, and someone who has seized a huge amount of anger for a lot of Americans, but there is nothing in the orthodoxy of the Republican Party's platform and philosophy that Donald Trump actually represents.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a phenomenon. You know, he is, and he says it. He says, I'm a movement. I'm not a candidate. I'm a movement. And there is a certain truth to that.
You know, Josh, I was thinking about where I got my avid interest in politics and history, and it goes all the way back to high school. And I can remember teachers who assigned us to watch presidential debates, and we did so and had long discussions. And I couldn't help, when I was watching this debate and all that preceded it, to be just profoundly saddened by what has happened to the discourse. I mean, it's sad, isn't it?
It is very sad. I mean, this was not similar to any debate that we've seen in presidential history. I mean, it was something totally, it's almost like we've lived in an alternative universe and this is what happened in a different type of game. I mean, it really was surreal watching that debate, a bit uncomfortable as well.
Yes.
A lot of it has to do with media consumption, too. And I hate to say it, but, you know, I talk to a lot of younger voters who only get their news not from newspapers, but from their social media feeds, from sites. Certainly, we've seen this in the Trump campaign. They have their own news outlets that kind of perpetuate their own point of view, and fewer people, even people who were partisan or ideological 15 years ago, would read the newspaper and largely have a shared set of facts, even if they thought the paper was biased or even if they were quibbling with certain details. Now people don't even have they don't even have the facts. They're just automatically going to the argument. And that's the Trump dynamic. I mean, that's basically what we're seeing with this Trump dynamic, in that you have a website in Breitbart, which is very popular, gets a lot of clicks, and is basically there to accentuate what Trump believes, and, you know, facts be damned. And it's not just on the right. I mean, on the left, you also have sort of a flourishing of websites and publications that also just confirm what people believe and not challenge it. And, you know, this is not a good trend. It's not changing anytime soon, and I really kind of shudder to think what's going to happen in the future, even after this election. Mm-hmm. I don't think things are going to get better anytime soon.
Stephen. Could I add something real quickly?
Of course.
And that is that my colleague and chair of my department here just told me half an hour ago that the latest polls in Iowa seem to show that Donald Trump's biggest support in Iowa is young voters.
Really?
Young voters, because, you know, the story is that it's a bunch of middle-aged, sort of resentful people who have lost their industrial jobs in, you know, smokestack factories and the steel mills and the coal mines. In Iowa, it's younger voters.
We're welcoming phone calls. As you can imagine, our lines are filled, but we'll have some openings as we carry on here. We're talking all things political, and we have two guests with us. Stefan Schmidt, who is a professor of political science at Iowa State University, and Josh Krauschauer. He's political editor for the National Journal and writes the weekly Against the Grain column. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Polls are showing, and this was prior to the debate, CNN showing that Hillary Clinton won the debate, but many analysts are saying, well, Trump didn't perform as badly as we thought he might, but it shows, as of the video release, an 11-point deficit here. Does the video end any chance that Donald Trump has a becoming president? And what do you make of the discourse in our country as we are a month away from electing the president of the United States? What can you say? We want to hear what you say. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We sure would like to thank all of you who contributed to our fall membership drive. More than 4,800 listeners pledged, including 1,000 new members. You donated nearly $700,000 to fund Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just wonderful, and thank you ever so much. To your phone calls now, let's go to Reed in Clintonville first. Hi, Reed.
Oh, good afternoon. As a proud sustainer of WPR, I am so thankful that we can help you, Catherine. Or Kathleen, to stay on the air.
Thank you.
I would just like to say that the actions by Donald Trump, I believe, are, of course, abhorrent, but also the majority of the people in the United States probably believe that he actually has done these things. And should that be the case, I would equate that, his activities with a young man, Brock Turner, who was a Stanford University swimmer, who did very similar acts and was actually imprisoned or sentenced to jail for an unbelievably short time. But the acts were very, very similar. And should someone come forward and say that Donald Trump has done this, I would hope that Donald Trump would experience the inside of a jail cell that he's promised to provide for Hillary Clinton. And one last very quick item, and that is Muslims everywhere are now tweeting, or I think that's how it works, Muslims report stuff, and that is something that Donald Trump said last night, and it has just lit up the Twitter universe with a number of absolutely great tweets making fun of Donald Trump, and it has been a real eye-opening experience.
Thanks, Reed, very much for your call. I would imagine everybody is on pins and needles waiting to see what has not yet been released, Josh.
Yeah, well, one dynamic that really has gone overlooked in this election is that there's really no distinction anymore between the private and the public.
Absolutely.
We're seeing that with these endless leaked emails that the Russians apparently have done at the Democratic National Committee, and as loathsome as those Trump comments were, it was a private videotape that he made, comments he was making privately with Billy Bush. I mean, they're horrible, but usually, you know, you don't get the private and the public can often be very different, and yet now there's no distinction between the two in our politics, and, you know, you're only going to see, again, these trends are not going to get better, they're going to get worse, and people are going to, one reason why a lot of good potential office holders don't run for offices because they just don't want to subject themselves for their whole personal lives and their whole, you know, everything that they've done to be subjected to such intense scrutiny. So this is something, I mean, the one thing that surprised me the most about the Trump videotape, I thought that all the scandal and all the horrible things he said was already baked in the cake for voters. If you were going to like Trump, I couldn't see anything that would persuade you otherwise. And he's made comments on Howard Stern's radio show for years right. that were on audio tape that you could listen to that are out there on the internet. And yet this really galvanized this race. The comments that he made to Billy Bush galvanized the race. And the poll that the NBC Wall Street Journal just put out just showed his support among a lot of previous backers has dropped considerably. So, you know, I feel like, well, what do we know, right? I mean, everything he said throughout this whole election had very little impact among his base, except perhaps for this latest incident.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of private public, what did you make of Hillary Clinton's response to what she said privately to Wall Street donors? Stephen?
Well, you know, it's so funny because what she said to them was, you know, when you're negotiating, when you're making deals, running for office and doing other things, there are several different ways that you talk about issues. And everybody knows that that's true. You know, when you're negotiating a deal, you may have some private discussions with people making the deal and public ones for the country that you're negotiating with. And her discussion there about being in favor of trade agreements, the Republicans should love that because, you know, they love trade deals and Bill Clinton loved trade deals. So those things were not, I've talked to a lot of people since that was released, and nobody really said it was so shocking. I mean, the one thing that Josh was talking about that I find fascinating is, do you think that if John F. Kennedy were running for office today, he would have the same problems that Donald Trump has?
I would love to have had all of this released and seen what Bernie Sanders, though, had to say about this issue on the campaign trail. He would have taken her to task on this, don't you think, Josh?
Well, sure, but look at John F. Kennedy. I mean, John F. Kennedy had more problems or issues with women, including mafia girlfriends,
right.
than Donald Trump. So,
right. I mean, you know, if we actually had behind this, if we had like Nixon tapes or LBJ tapes of Bill Clinton behind the scenes in the White House, I mean, he may well have been impeached and had to leave office. But so a lot of times the audio tape or the videotape can make a huge difference, even though we all know what actually has gone on behind the scenes. But more broadly speaking, I do agree with Stefan that, you know, I think I talked to a lot of Republicans, establishment Republicans, who privately said, yeah, like we can work with Hillary Clinton and this stuff is, you know, is actually pretty encouraging in terms of getting bipartisan accomplishments achieved if she's elected president. Politically, though, this is about as anti-establishment on both, you know, Trump, Sanders. I mean, this is an anti-establishment mood, almost a nihilistic mood in both parties. And if this was any other Republican running that wasn't named Donald Trump, they would really, and this is one of Hillary Clinton's biggest vulnerabilities, and they would hammer her like no other with these revelations. But it pales in comparison to the attention that this Trump video has got.
Yeah. If the polls hold where they are now, what does it portend for all of the Senate races, for the congressional races? Do you want to branch into that, Stephan?
Well, I think it's up in the air, isn't it? Because it's extremely fluid, and it is so close to the election that, you know, this divergence off the railroad tracks into the ditch here could have terrible consequences, especially for the Senate races. I know that Republicans are even talking about losing the House. I find that to be unbelievable. And these are Republican leaders who are, you know, members of the congressional delegation who are saying, oh, my God, you know, this could cost us control of not only the White House, but the House and the Senate. I'm not sure that that's correct. Certainly a lot of congressional districts are really bulletproof. I mean, they've been gerrymandered so well that they're only Republican voters in those districts. And the Democrats have run very weak candidates. I mean, here in Iowa, the 4th District, Steve King, know, they've always run essentially suicide mission candidates against him. And so it depends on how good the Democratic opponents to the Republicans are and whether or not voters will take it out on people down ticket or if they like their representative. Because, you know, in political science, we know that people hate government and hate Congress, but they love their congresswoman.
Yeah, I just wanted to just
sure,
Josh. Exactly right. And the NBC Wall Street Journal poll actually tested the generic ballot, and it showed Democrats with a 7-point lead, which is a jump. It was pretty much statistically tied a few weeks ago. So there is a big jump among Democratic support, but I agree with Stefan entirely in that, you know, Democrats pretty much need maybe about a 10-point advantage to really take back the House, given gerrymandering, given self-sorting, given polarization. So, this is sort of the best-case moment right now for Democrats, and they're still only at a 7-point advantage, which is enough on all likelihood to take the Senate, but it's going to make taking the House still very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Eugene and Viola, hi.
Well, good afternoon, Kathleen, and to your guests. I think Donald Trump is the best thing that's happened to the Democratic Party in years, and I think that's going to play out in an election. Thanks much.
All right, Eugene, thanks for the call. Is he the candidate? You keep playing another scenario. What if it had been another Republican candidate? I would imagine that Hillary Clinton would have been given more of a run for her money.
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, one of the leaked documents from these WikiLeaks papers is comes from a staffer, a senior staffer on Clinton's campaign, acknowledging that they were really worried that they could lose to almost every other Republican except for Donald Trump. So this was in 2015 when, you know, Cruz and a few other Republicans looked like they had their own problems. But even back then, they recognized that Clinton had some serious political vulnerabilities of her own in an election that really was all about change until Trump changed that dynamic. But, no, I mean this is sort of the dilemma Republicans face. They almost have two parties in one. You have the Bush party and the Trump party, and they've coexisted peacefully enough over the last few years that they have a historic high in House seats. They have more House seats than they've ever had. Republicans since 1928. They're near historic highs in terms of their Senate representation with 54 Senate seats. They hold over 30 governorships. I mean, the Republican Party, if you just look at the offices that they hold, they're in very healthy shape. But because of one candidate who just is so unconventional and so loathed or disliked, all those gains could just go out the window in what could otherwise have been a productive cycle.
And let's go to Paul in Two Rivers next. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I think Republicans are reaping what they've sown, which is hate. They've been putting out a dialogue, a hateful dialogue, for many, many years. And it goes back to Bill Clinton and his affairs and then on through the successful candidacy of Barack Obama. The fact of the matter is, though, Trump has been able to take the ginned-up population that's feeling all this hate and focus it. He was able to do that far more successfully than any of the other candidates on the Republican side. He just knew how to play the people and play their hatred and focus it.
And the hatred of what, Paul? What kind of hatred?
Well, a hatred of the establishment, a hatred of the Clintons. Anything they wanted to hate, he could find it. He found out what they wanted to hate and then told them that they were right in hating, that there was nothing wrong with that, that their hate was justified, and vote for me and I'll take it and we'll get rid of this. I don't even know if he wants to get rid of the hate because it's so useful to him.
Josh?
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the thing that Republicans are having trouble grappling with, that their voters have a much different worldview than their leaders. And it's something that, I mean, privately I talked to several Republican operatives and office holders in the last 24 hours that have not come out against Trump, not for Clinton certainly, yet they can't publicly say that because they would lose a majority of Republican voters in November. So this is this dangerous catch-22 where they can't really distance themselves too much from Donald Trump because their own voters support him, and yet they can't win any more voters that are swing voters or more moderate Republicans because, and it's not even a moderate conservative issue, just more mainstream Republicans because it's essentially a catch-22. So this is the dilemma that Republicans find themselves in, and I think it would have to take a real landslide defeat for them to really change things, to really understand that this was a path that led the party to devastating effects.
Mm-hmm.
But Kathleen, I would quote one of my great mentors at Columbia University when I was in the PhD program, and he said to us, never underestimate the power of hate for politicians. And look around the world. Look at history.
Right.
Hate is a highly, highly motivating factor. And if you can point to scapegoats and say, these are the people that are causing your problems, and we need to get rid of them, we need to stop them, we need to keep them out, or we need to kill them, that can create a tremendous mobilization. So I would say that we're in a dangerous spot. And pointing to the people who are the enemies is taking place all over the place among all kinds of groups. And it's leading people to go and shoot cops, and it's leading cops to shoot people that they suspect maybe have guns. You know, we are at a moment that is much more than Donald Trump, I would say that.
Mm-hmm.
We are at a destabilized moment, and we don't know where this is going to go, what direction this is all going to go.
Let's go to another part of the debate last night that got a lot of attention. Donald Trump vowing to assign a special prosecutor to investigate Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server if he wins the White House. And this is what he had to say and what he would do if he were president. Let's listen.
I didn't think I'd say this, but I'm going to say it. And I hate to say it, but if I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there has never been so many lies, so much deception. There has never been anything like it. And we're going to have a special prosecutor. When I speak, I go out and speak, the people of this country are furious. In my opinion, the people that have been long-term workers at the FBI are furious. There has never been anything like this, where emails and you get a subpoena. You get a subpoena, and after getting the subpoena, you delete 33,000 emails. And then you acid wash them, or bleach them, as you would say, a very expensive process. So we're going to get a special prosecutor, and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one-fifth of what you've done.
Stephen, that goes right to the base, that chant that we've heard, and I've heard it all over the place, in places you wouldn't even imagine on vacation, in the middle of a lake, lock her up, lock her up.
Well, yeah, it's extraordinary, but you notice, and you didn't play that part, but when he got done and basically said lock her up, the audience cheered, or his supporters in the audience cheered, even though they weren't supposed to interact and express themselves. This is a very popular thing with his supporters. And the dislike, I would say hatred, of Hillary Clinton has been ongoing, as the Clintons themselves would say, for decades. You know, you listen to Rush Limbaugh, which I do, because you have to know what everybody is saying. There aren't very many liberal talk show hosts, so you can't listen to them too much unless you live in certain parts of the country. But they've been pushing this, that Hillary Clinton is the devil incarnate, for a long, long time, and it's no wonder that people hate her so much, and that Donald Trump would find it convenient to say we're going to jail her for, you know, whatever the reasons are, because it's very popular with the base of the party, or his base.
You know, Josh, what did you think about that part of the debate?
You know, which part of the debate are you talking about?
The debate where he says that he would prosecute her and she'd be in jail.
Yeah, I mean, this is this unprecedented moment where you basically have the Republican candidate saying that he would use the tools of justice to go after his political opponent. It's something we've never seen before, at least in recent political history. Now, I think he meant it. I mean, Donald Trump is kind of like the guy at the bar who just talks about a lot of issues casually. He doesn't have a real depth of policy. I mean, that's what makes him appealing to a lot of his supporters, the blue-collar supporters in particular. So, in a way, I mean, this is why you kind of judge these debates at on a different angle that you would a Romney-Obama debate or a McCain-Obama. You know, Trump isn't offering any depth of policy. He's kind of just speaking out of instinct. And a lot of people agree with his instincts. They worry that he doesn't really have a command of the issues beyond the surface. But I think on a lot of the top lines, people may agree with him. It's when he just kind of goes on and on and doesn't really show much command and much, frankly, respect for the separation of powers in that instance.
Kathy, our next caller. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to point out that in 1991, the Tailhook scandal and investigation revealed that 83 women and 7 men were found to have been assaulted, sexually assaulted. After the investigation, the Secretary of Navy had to resign, and several admirals were censured. So, you know, it's been established that this behavior is not acceptable, even though I'm afraid it continues. But how could women in the armed services possibly be loyal to such a commander-in-chief? And, you know, if he continues to express things like this, and maybe women will come forward who experienced his assaultive behavior, I think we have a real problem, or it would condone such behavior in the military.
Mm. Yeah, interesting point. You know, when I heard it, it shocked me. I just don't know anybody who speaks that way. And for him to evidently, I don't know what locker rooms he's frequenting, but so many people said people don't talk that way. It's an affront to people who spend a lot of time in locker rooms who are playing sports. Do people talk that way? I mean, I was shocked by it.
Not in my locker room, but, you know, And I think probably not in most locker rooms, but I suppose in bars and pool halls and other places, people talk like, I mean, the words that he used are words that are pretty common in the English language. And
well, if you know, you know,
junior high school, well, not for a presidential candidate, you know, and not, you know, for sort of, quote, respectable people. But, you know, if you go to a junior high, I'm sure you hear those words all the time.
You know what's notable, though, is that Billy Bush, who's promoted, got promoted. This tape has been out there for 11 years. He was promoted to being
right.
a Today Show anchor.
Right.
And right, and so no one really thought this was a big deal, even though this was in the archives of NBC Entertainment. And also, what's stunning is, you know, we've heard all these similar types of comments on Howard Stern. He's gone on Howard Stern show dozens and dozens of times and said things about his own daughter that kind of make my stomach churn.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's not like we don't know the audio. We have the audio. It's been out there. I mean, have people not been listening or not been paying attention? Like I said before, I am actually stunned that I thought a lot of this stuff was baked in the cake, that, yes, this was a bad news cycle for Donald Trump, but the notion that that he's not a misogynist or that he didn't have these very crude views, I mean, this was something that I kind of took for granted because we've been covering the campaign and we've been reporting on a lot of these types of audio tapes and videotapes, yet apparently this was the thing. And I think of the fact that it's been portrayed as he was trying to assault someone or saying, you know, the fact that he's a celebrity, he can do whatever he wants,
right.
I mean, but you know, that again goes to the line of what you're saying privately, and he certainly wasn't intending these things
but,
to have
but,
a public
Josh and Kathleen, you know, Howard Stern, when he was on cable, and I've watched the show a couple of times, that's not my kind of television, he used to have naked women on his show, right?
Right.
And he used to wrap them up in rugs and take them down and put them on the sidewalk out on the street.
Yeah,
I mean, this is entertainment,
yep.
know? And you know, when Kathleen, when you ask, you've never heard of people talking like that in a locker room, well, listen to Howard Stern.
I don't think I will.
It's out there, it's entertainment, respectable investors
yep.
and companies that are
right.
You know,
I know what you're
sending
saying.
Down stuff from satellites are transmitting this stuff.
I know.
But then when a presidential candidate uses the language and so on, then it's no longer acceptable. So, you know, you have to say that we are a crude culture.
Yes.
And that it's spilling over into politics
yes.
this year.
Yes, yes, we are a crude culture. Yes, we are. More phone calls in a moment. It's All Things Political you're listening to, and, well, you know what we're talking about. We're talking about everything that's going on. It's hard to believe it's going on, but it is. And welcoming your phone calls at 800-486-8655. Stephen Schmidt, who is a professor of political science at Iowa State University. Josh Krushauer is the political editor for National Journal and author of the weekly Against the Grain column. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our Facebook page, if we can't get to you because we have a couple guests and a lot of messages coming in, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Please write your thoughts there. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls and to Ed in West Allis. Hi, Ed.
Well, I want to make one point before I get to my main topic, and that is that 80% of blue-collar people are going to be voting for Hillary Clinton this year. We've been disparaged by the right-wing political professors in this country somehow putting us all in the Donald Trump camp. I assure you that we are doing our work with the AFL-CIO to get the vote out. Now,
right.
We've had a lot of hand-wringing today about the political discourse in this country, circa 2016. And I want to tell you that all throughout the history of this republic, people have gone after politicians, and the despicable things that were said about Andrew Jackson's wife and about Andrew Jackson are just legendary. Your favorite hero, Kathleen, Abraham Lincoln, had things said about him in both of his elections in 1860 and 1864.
All right, where are you going with it, Ed? What,
bring
it up to now.
There's no difference between the political discourse in 2016 and what has happened in this country. President Kennedy had to go down to Texas to defend his Roman Catholic faith.
Okay. Is there a difference? Is this the bottom of the heap, or are there historical comparisons? Josh?
Well, look, I'll put the caveat, modern American history, post-FDR presidential history, in terms of the discourse. And on policy after policy, Trump is at odds with his own party. I mean, I can tell you that 16 Republican senators have said that they cannot support Donald Trump out of the 54 in the Republican caucus. We haven't seen that degree of defection in any election in either party this century. So this is something that is historic. I mean, yes, you could come up with some historical parallels. You could maybe make the George Wallace-Trump comparison that would have some credibility. You can look at other past presidential elections. You know, people were talking about Grover Cleveland's illegitimate child in the late 19th century. I mean, there's been a lot of rough political discourse. But to see an election like this that's so far out of line with what we've seen in the last two generations, it is something historic, and it's something that I don't think we have fully processed.
Dorothea in Madison. Hi, Dorothea.
I feel in this country there are so many self-righteous people that I have lived, well, I'm 63, and I have done all kinds of work. I'm an RN now, but I worked in bars. I've worked, factory work. I've done almost every kind of work you can imagine. And what Donald Trump said is, I mean, I've heard women say worse. I cannot believe, Catherine, that you have never heard anybody talk like Donald Trump.
No, I haven't. I must say I haven't.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Well, you are really sheltered.
No, I'm not sheltered, Dorothea.
I'll guarantee you I'm not sheltered. I've heard women say way worse. I mean, I've heard all kinds of conversations.
All right, so where's your point? Where are you going with this?
Well, my point is I just think people are so self-righteous, and what he has done is very little in comparison of what Hillary has done. She's been in so many scandals throughout the 30 years, it's unbelievable.
Stephen.
Well, it's interesting because I'm just looking at an article here about all the GOP women who stand by Donald Trump and, quote, blast those that are jumping ship over antique locker room talk. That's a Washington Times headline.
Jeez.
And we've talked about all the Republicans who are leaving Donald Trump's campaign and opposing him and condemning him. But here are a whole bunch of women, I've got their names all here in front of me, who are saying, no, we've got to stick with Donald Trump. This is old stuff. It's a diversion. It's just an effort by the mainstream media and the Democrats to try and undermine his campaign. So that's an interesting fact as well. I mean, women are still supporting him.
Yeah. They're just despicable comments, Josh. I don't know how they're despicable. They are.
He's actually losing. I mean, this is the working class women,
right?
were actually closely divided, the white working class women specifically, and this is how his numbers could fall even further, because that's the demographic that's going away from him after this latest video revelation. So, you know, and then like Stephen said, there's probably more that's going to come out. These apprentice transcripts are already starting to leak out. I mean, I we'll see if there's anything worse. You know, like I said, like I felt like everything was baked in the cake as far as Trump's character went, and I was wrong. So we'll see where this next month takes us.
Yeah. All right, let's go to a couple Facebook comments. Respond to what you will. Arlene says, Mr. Pence had to take a while to compose the response to his support of Trump. The Republicans have sold their souls. They can't stand another 4 years of Democrats. They want the Supreme Court nominee to be theirs and want to abolish the Affordable Care Act and to take away a woman's right to choose. Another listener says, will Republicans take this seriously? They said as much after the last election and the postmortem report. They said they were going to take seriously expanding their tent. What makes us think that the GOP will do so this time, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, the $64,000 question is, where does the party go after this election? And look, I think it's really hard to tell. Trump could go away and the party could rebuild, and usually a lot of presidential losers end up leaving the scene, like Michael Dukakis or Al Gore, or even Mitt Romney hasn't been too high profile since losing the 2012 election. But Trump is just such a figure larger than life, whether you love him or hate him. And now there's talk that he may try to start a television network, try to actually build a movement from some of these populist-minded voters that are supporting him, even if it only makes up, you know, 20% of the electorate. And, you know, if that happens, if he decides to stay on the political stage and really throw his celebrity and his profile around, that could be a nightmare scenario for the Republican Party. It really could exacerbate the rift that's already blowing up in the Republican Party's face.
Hmm. Oh, gentlemen, you know, I started this hour thinking, I don't even know what to say about this. I just, and I'm sort of back to that. It's just, what an election. We all deserve so much better. We just do, for heaven's sake. It's an important time. It's the discourse should be so much more elevated and substantial than what we're getting. It's just very sad. I'm back to that word, very sad. Thank you both very much for being with us this hour. Appreciate your time and your
thoughts.
Thanks,
Kathleen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Stefan. Our guest, Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science, Iowa State University. Dr. Politics is what people call him. He's the author of a number of books and has his own political talk show. Josh Kroschauer is the political editor for National Journal, writes the Against the Grain column, and is a political analyst on all kinds of networks. Thanks very much to Scotty Lee Myers for producing this show, and Scotty and Zev Gozman for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks for your contribution. If you didn't get on the air, go to our Facebook page and write your comments. We want to read all of them. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show.